Hello, everyone, and welcome to Heavy Pod is Heavy Cast episode 35. And how are you, Eden?
I'm doing well. This is an unscheduled recording, so things might get a bit hairy.
Yeah. Eden was like, hey, do you want a podcast today? And I was like, okay, sure. I'm out of work early, so let's do it. Let's do it live. We're doing it live.
And here we are.
Yeah, we still have an agenda that we accumulated over the week, but we kind of added some last-minute items.
As long as shitty black metal from the 80s.
Did black metal exist in the 80s? I'm too tired to...
Is that the joke? Check that. I'm going to say that's the joke.
Venom, probably. I'm just going to embarrass myself, so I'll just shut up. Dank fact about the number 35. Do you know what's dank about 35, Eden?
What is?
It's 1 plus the number of episodes Heavy Pod is Heavy Cast can go without selling out. So, audibletrial.com/heavy.
We actually you know what to do.
What?
You know what to do.
You know what to do. Go there, sign up. And so, actually, I'm not going to bore you with the details about Audible right now. I'll bring it back somewhere halfway through the middle of the episode. But yeah, it's a thing. You can go there. If you like us, do it. Audible's cool. I'll talk more about it later. And this week's topics. So, weekly happenings. Here we go. So, did you hear the Whitechapel album?
I heard it's available some streaming. Yes, it has become available, as we say, in the industry.
No, it's actually like legitimately streaming.
No, yeah, I know.
Oh, okay. Because that's usually the moniker I use for it's like available for piracy.
It's leaked.
It's lit. Okay. So
lit. This is what happens when we don't plan this. Like the puns are not working. So the new Whitechapel.
Yeah, so I did hear, I would comfortably say I heard all of it because I listened to like 3 songs off of it. 2 of the songs have clean vocals. I was really curious to see what the clean vocals were like, and I listened to them, and it was like Nickelback.
Yeah, it's not good.
So it's on par with the Lamb of God song. I think it was 512 was the name of the song from the latest album where Randy... It does a really bad job of clean singing. It's on par with that, but since Whitechapel's bass line is heavier, it's even worse.
Like, this is one... Why? Just why? Just because it's a tool it that you can fit. Use like, to be... Yeah.
Like, I don't have anything against clean vocals, but it's just, like, why?
Of course not. I mean, I don't really have a way to know what went down, like, what was the decision... track on this, like how they came to this decision, but it couldn't possibly be you know, like artistic. They were in the studio and they said, you know what, this track really needs to be whole, clean vocals. It was obviously like a publicity
this track
stunt.
Needs this to be whole situation either, because like it's tracks that are entirely dedicated to doing just this.
Yeah. So yeah, it was just a decision to, you know, to be edgy because we haven't had clean vocals and we're a band that was, you know, associated with ignorant metal and stuff, like super aggressive stuff. And suddenly we'll do clean vocals and everybody will talk about it on social media and stuff like that. So, yeah.
I also wonder how the guitarist came to say that, no, there aren't any clean vocals on the album. Like, this isn't like a thing where, like, you know, if he did like the yell screaming singing thing where it's like debatable if it's clean vocals or if it's just like a few spots. Sure.
It was part of the marketing plan, man. It was, and it worked, right? It got everybody in a buzz. Everybody was talking about the contradictions, and then, you know, people listened to it to hear whether there are clean vocals or not on the album. And, you know, I mean, I guess fine. I'm not saying it's morally depravable or whatever, and like whatever. You suck for doing it. But you know, it's artificial, and at the end of the day, it's not good sonically. Like, I would be able to excuse...
They should have put that effort into their songwriting instead of marketing.
Definitely. Oh, God, this ties so well into Gojira.
Go ahead.
Like, okay, so... Fucking hell. I'm still possessed by this feeling of unrealness. Like, surrealness is maybe a better word because unrealness is not a word. That I'm saying all these negative things about Gojira, even with... L'Enfant Sauvage being not that great, I never for once imagined that I would be here, you know, lambasting the latest album. So I posted my review yesterday, and it got some reactions, considering that it's one of the only negative reviews of this album. I know of only one more posted by our good friend Tommy over on The Monolith. Mm-hmm. And the rest is like glowing. 4 out of 5, 5 out of 5. This is an important step forward and a building block in the band's future and stuff like that. And the reason this ties into Whitechapel for me is that I try to theorize about why this happened. And I open by saying that, you know, I don't really have a way to know what happened, but I can theorize and hypothesize. And from seeing their interviews and the booklets and the videos surrounding the album, it seems that they got mixed up as to what comes first. They seem to think that first you build this super abstract and large concept, you flesh it out with, you know, videos and aesthetic, and then you write the music to fit that. When in reality, usually, not always, but usually, great albums work the other way around. People sit down to write music or lyrics, and that's what comes out. They don't sit down and say, now I'm going to write a concept album. It grows from their work. And when you flip it like that, and the weight comes down on getting the message across or appearing super artistic and sleek, you get this sort of album, which is vacant. Right? It feels...
Vacuous, really?
Vacuous, yeah. It has a lot of vacuity, featuring Randy Blythe. It just falls short. And you see this in metal all the time. We actually have a topic about this that we might touch on later. Like, you can't force concepts. You can't force ideas to take shape. You can't interview and keep saying... This is something I said in the review itself. You can't interview and keep saying, we're going to save the planet. We're going to save the planet. Be excited. Like, you can't command people to be excited. You need to make them excited for your music. So your music
show,
comes
not
first.
Tell, right?
Yeah, always. And that's something that we wrote in this topic that we might get to. And here, it's all tell, all the time. Like, everything is in your face. And the last thing I want to say here is just think about the effectiveness that this has, or the lack thereof, with the fans. Like, let's say that I'm the Duplantier brothers. Sorry if I'm butchering the French. And let's say I want to change the world, and I want to use my music to do it. I have two paths. I can... I can make, like, a flat album and focus mostly on, you know, the message around it and the aesthetic and all that stuff. Or I can focus most of my time on making sure that my album is super exciting and electrifying. So what do you think works best? 50 fucking interviews because you're on Roadrunner and you have the connects now? Or one song from The Link? Or Terra Incognita? Or The Way of All Flesh?
Yeah. Remembrance.
Yeah, just, you know, these songs seriously get me hyped. Like, I don't become an environmentalist, but yeah, if I listen to that song and then someone comes up to me right afterwards and he says, oh yeah, fuck the planet, I just throw plastic bags everywhere, I'll scream in his face, right? Plastic bag in the sea. Because that's how it works. It galvanizes me. It moves me to action. And listening
to... Where
did
this album move you?
Into the abyss. where I'm finally rid of the pain of having to listen to it.
So how was the reception to your review then?
So, it sucked. I'll tell you why. I don't mind when people disagree with me, but that's not when I say that the reception sucked. I say that when there's no actual discussion happening. Like, people in the comments were, you don't get it, man. Their mother died and they're really, really sensitive. That's why the album sounds the way it sounds. How is that a counterpoint to anything? That's maybe an explanation, but it's not a counterpoint to the fact that the album is bad. Like, you don't get it, they're sensitive guys. What the fuck does that even have to do with anything else? And then the other type of comments was, no, this album is good. And I'm like, do you want to maybe, you know, explain? I'm not saying write a counter review, but maybe I'm entitled to more than a few lines or a single word. And it's amazing to me how people can't back up their shit. Like, they have nothing to say. They continue to drivel on and say, oh yeah, this riff was, you say it's not good, but it is good.
So I think I love seeing the five stages of grief in the comments. Like, there's the denial ones where like, oh well, you know, it's different. It stands out. Maybe it's not their best, but they tried to do something unique here. And then there's the anger of like, no, fuck you, this is bad. Sorry, this is good. You're wrong. And then there's like the bargaining where people are like, oh, maybe you have some points, but hey, I still enjoyed it. And then there's the depression, who's like, where there's like, man, I loved Gojira. This, why did they do this? And then there's the acceptance where like, yep, all right. And there are a few acceptance comments, but just seeing these stages is pretty amazing.
I mean, the community is pretty divided around this. I am seeing voices that don't like this album. A lot of, you know, my own circle, confirmation bias, but
surround yourself with people bias. You agree with.
Yeah, Echo Chamber and all that stuff. But it's really interesting to me to see that all the fucking outlets just marched to the fucking beat of this release. And like, I'm not saying you're not allowed to disagree with me, but even if you like this album, it's not a fucking 5 out of 5 under any definition.
I mean, there's like, always this weird thing with large outlets and like them feeling like basically PR, with them being like, you know, having deep connections with the labels and like.
But I don't know. I'm not talking about, you know, metal injection.
Ethics and metal journalism, man.
Yeah, I'm talking about like. Okay, I don't mean to call out anyone here, but it gents. They're hardly from, you know, the largest magazine in the world.
But it gents is like like they just are almost always positive about everything.
Yeah, I guess. I don't want to listen to this album again, and I don't want to keep talking about it. I just want this album to go away.
I will try to devise ways to make you listen to it.
Thanks, I appreciate that.
No problem.
One last thing. Okay. When we spoke about this a few weeks ago, I said that if the album would be bad, then I would catalog Gojira into that category where I no longer listen to the releases when they're released, and I wait 4 or 5 years for the comeback album. So that's what's happening right now. Like,
I mean, they take 4 years between albums anyway.
I don't know. What I'm saying is that they're no longer on my to watch list.
Yeah, like, I know that feeling where a band's like, hey, there's going to be a new thing. And you're like, yeah, all right, sure, whatever.
Yeah. Let's talk about another potentially divisive release. Opeth.
Oh, well, we don't know anything about this one yet.
Actually, we got 30 seconds of sound. And
I like how you didn't qualify it with anything further than sound.
Yeah, because it sort of confirms that this is going to be a continuation of the line.
I mean, the title Sorceress even kind of confirms that to me, because it evokes that
snippet,
like
psychedelic progressive thing. But the first snippet that they chose to release on this album is literally a guy wanking away on a Hammond.
Yeah.
It's like a guy sitting in front of a really large synth. I'm sorry if it's not a fucking Hammond. And of course, it's with a wood inlay, the synth itself. And it has analog cables coming out of it and all that bullshit. They're not analog, actually, but whatever. And it's just him hitting a note. And then, what do you call that wheel that controls the octaves on the synth?
The shifter, the pitch shifter, I think.
Yeah, exactly. So he's wanking away with that pitch shifter. No,
pitch shifter.
Pitch shifter, pinch shifter. What the fuck is that? Sounds like a terrible
sex toy.
Or a slam band.
Sure.
We should explore that Venn diagram field, slam band and sex toy names.
There's probably a lot of overlap, more than you would want.
Let's not. Oh god, I'm now getting like slam band names flashing into my head. So, I was okay with Pale Communion.
Mm-hmm.
It was better than Heritage.
But it was a pale imitation of their previous...
of their communion. Of their previous communion with the fans. So, but again, like, there are parts on it where you listen to it and you're like, this is where... We spoke about this before.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
this is where the distortion should come in.
Yeah.
I'm not going to reiterate. Hopefully, Sorceress, like, I don't know, incorporate some heavy stuff. I've lost not hope, but I don't think they'll go back to doing what anything heavy.
I'm at the point with Opeth where you mentioned you are with Gojira, where I'm like, I don't care. I'm not going to listen to it. I'm just,
yeah.
I will check a song out so that I can talk about it on the podcast, but I'm not going to be excited about it. Like, I'm not going to be like, oh shit, Opeth released a new song. I should like stop working and get my headphones and check this out immediately. No.
Yeah.
I'm like, exactly. I'm going to be like, oh, they released a new song on Monday. All right, we're podcasting on Sunday. Let me just listen to that when I'm podcasting.
Yeah.
Yeah, at that point for me right now. Speaking of other bands who do like progressive death metal who are just kind of worth dismissing at this point, we got a promo for the Black Ground Initiate album.
Okay. Ouch.
Yeah. So, man, there are like one or two pretty good songs on the album, and there are moments on the album where they're like the good moments from their previous stuff, right? They're like really, really good stuff. You see where their talent shines, where everything comes together, the clean singing hits right. They have some good riffs. But like, man, the album feels so much longer than it is. Like, there's so many sections of just generic chugging with the throaty, like, unemotive vocals from their vocalist. And like, so I sent the promo to one of our guys, and like, we just had like hilarious comments about it because like it's just not interesting. Like, he was really hyped for the album before I sent him the promo, and then like by the end of the day I was like, so did you listen to it? He was like, man, I can't finish it. It's like, it's not good. It's this. So okay, here's the thing. This band, their highs are like their high. I was gonna say high notes, but no, that's not what I mean. I'm saying that like the when what they do
the
good,
the best points of the album.
Yeah, what they do good, it's amazing. And if they did like that caliber of stuff all the time, this album would be like top five of the year for me. But that's less than 5% of the album. And
oh God,
there's a lot of like uninteresting stuff. And a vast majority of the uninteresting stuff is just low string, dum 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 ba-na, dum dum, like type of very uninteresting riffs that go on way too long. And like, why? Just, the songs are like, I don't know, 5 to 7 minutes long, and just cut that shit down. Make like, if they made the same songs with the same riffs but like 3 minutes long or 4 minutes long, it would be so much better.
Yeah, but they've been classified as progressive, and that's the death of artistic freedom often. Because if you change one fucking thing, then you're gonna have your fans ramming down their opinions of you on YouTube and stuff like that. I'm not saying it's an excuse. I'm just explaining the mentality. Yeah, it's a shame. Like this band, when song
their
the Crippled
EP
Bull
was
came
so
out,
promising.
They were the next big thing, right? They were the heirs to fucking everyone. Gojira and Mastodon and Opeth combined, like they were so hyped. And then the Wreckage of Stars was like
pretty good.
Oh, it's. It, yeah, and people were, you know, saying maybe it's a sophomore slump, right? The second album is often, you know, they don't have that hunger that we spoke of last week, and they still haven't found their balance.
Well, it's their debut album, but yeah, details. I get your point.
Yeah, but it's not their debut release, though, right? So, and then the people who liked Wreckage but were expecting a bit more were really anticipating this one, and from what I'm hearing, it's nothing.
Yeah, I would say that it's less enjoyable to listen to than Wreckage of Stars. Because like there was a more riffs, and what riffs they had were like more interesting. I think Ahmed told me that I think they lost one of the guitar players or something like that.
Yeah, they did, and he was replaced by Wes Hodge. Right?
Yeah, ugh.
Which is
his song on Autotheism is like the absolute worst song the band has ever written. It's just fucking terrible chug fest. Anyway, going back to background, like the songs that I really liked were apparently songs that were written by that guy.
Oh.
And, yeah.
That's telling.
Yeah, exactly. And then the rest, Borefest songs, were just songs that were written after he left.
Well, we know what happened there, then.
Yep. Do we know what happened with Pyrexia?
Holy fuck. No one knows what happened with fucking Pyrexia.
So, we're going to talk about this, but I just want to mention that we should, again, not jump to conclusions after, you know, recent events. So this is just charges. The vocalist for the band Pyrexia, and they're like a mid-tier band, I would say. Like, they're not a huge deal, but, you know, people who are interested in that type of stuff know about them. He's been arrested for allegedly shooting and killing 3 people. So apparently he lives in this like commune. No, like in, I don't know. He's like a survivalist.
His own property.
His own property in like in the middle of nowhere in West Virginia. And like apparently he's like a pro-Confederate, pro-Second Amendment dude. People entered his property and he apparently shot them down and killed them. And he's charged with murder. And it's not even a case of he says, she says here. The dude actually posted on his Facebook saying, this was self-defense. I talked to a cop and he even agreed this is an open and shut case of self-defense and that they probably won't even pursue charges. These guys stole over $20,000 of our stuff and sold it for drugs and threatened me to my face before. And this post is like full of typos, so I'm trying to interpret it, but I can't. Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah, this is a really sticky situation. Yeah. And the other thing I want to point out here is that he was apprehended after an 8-hour manhunt.
Yeah.
So I don't know how well that ties in with self-defense.
Yeah, that, you know, if you're just doing self-defense, then you're just like, okay, you're just like, hey, raise your hands and be like, okay, yeah, I shot this guy. He was on my property. Sorry, you know, just come here, look at the situation, and then do what needs to be done. If you're like an 8-hour manhunt, then that, you know, doesn't help your case.
No, it doesn't. Weird. This is a weird article.
Yeah. So, I guess we'll see how it develops, but, like, what the fuck, man? I'm not gonna... And, like, this is also, like, in, I guess, well, poor taste after last week's events in, you know, Orlando.
Yeah. I mean, this is a super politically charged event, right? Like, he was anti-government.
Yeah, he was a gun rights activist.
Yeah, we're not gonna open that can of worms.
Next time on Heavy Pod is Heavy Cast.
We solve the gun problem.
So,
you know, like in Always Sunny in Philadelphia?
Yep.
The gang solves the gun problem.
Speaking of a worm problem, so you like the Dune books, right?
I love them. They're some of my favorite all time.
Did you know books. That you could get those books on Audible?
Nice. I did not see coming.
I'm not gonna do the extended shilling thing like that a lot of podcasts do, but I just want to mention one thing that... Like, if 2 people sign up for, so we get paid by every 2 person who signs up for trial from this. And if 2 people sign up for this, that funds like 8 episodes of the podcast. So,
yeah.
Yeah. Also, I just want to give out a little Audible pro tip. If you're, so Audible has credits and like you can buy a book with a credit or with money. And like the trial is for, you get 1 free credit, when you sign up for this trial. The thing is, everything, every individual item in their store is 1 credit. So what you can do is, and I did this with the Southern Reach trilogy, you can buy each book individually and they're 1 credit each, but there's also an item for the Southern West trilogy. So Southern Reach trilogy, and that's also 1 credit. So you can buy 3 books for 1 credit. So yeah, Audible hack right there. Moving on. From the shilling section. Speaking of shilling, so In Flames are back on Nuclear Blast.
Yeah, by the way, OPF also signed to Nuclear Blast around the announcement, so it's a big week for one of the biggest labels already, so, you know.
And In Flames used to be on Nuclear Blast. I don't remember at what point they fell off. I think Come Clarity was on... something called like Ferret Records or something like that. So, but like a lot of their career was on Nuclear Blast. Okay, Come Clarity was on Ferret for US and Nuclear Blast for EU. A Sense of Purpose was on Nuclear Blast. Sounds of a Playground Fading was on Century Media. And their fucking terrible Siren Charms album, not that Sounds of a Playground is good, that was on Sony Music. And now they're back to Nuclear Blast. So, interesting.
And label hopping.
Also, they're apparently supposed to release an album this year.
Who gives a shit?
So, seriously. In Flames was the band that got me into, you know, heavier music, I guess. And we should do a Balls Deep on them sometime.
Yeah.
But like, there's the last two albums have been so fucking terrible. I didn't like A Sense of Purpose either, but like, I think it's really bad. But like, Sounds of Playground Feeding and Siren Charms, like, they define new lows in music for me. They're just fucking terrible. Yet I'm such a fanboy that I'm still hoping that maybe they can turn it around one day.
Maybe that comeback album is around the corner.
Yeah. Yeah.
You just keep hoping like a drug addict. That got dark.
Yeah, I'll talk about my love-hate relationship with In Flames on another episode because it's out of context here. Speaking of drug addicts and dark subjects, you should take this one.
Yeah, so we mentioned that... wait, which one do you want me to take? I think we're going to do the different segue.
Okay.
You want me to do the Plebeian Grandstand thing?
No, I was talking about the Pen of Salvation.
Yeah, I was also going for that. So I was just doubting myself for no reason, as I always do, because my life is a mess.
Yes, it is.
So, ignore that. A few weeks ago, we spoke about the Remedy Lane remasters being underway. They were remastered by... or remixed, I think, by Jens Bogren, which is sort of a question mark for both Noyen and I, more so for Noyen. And we weren't sure that his style really fits Remedy Lane, and that Remedy Lane wouldn't lose more in the remix than it's worth. And then there was one track released to everyone, and I got the album today.
We spoke about the one track like a week or two ago. Yeah, and we were pretty positive about it.
Yeah, we said it's good. So Inside Out, thank you guys, by the way, sent me the album. And I listened to it.
Ethics and metal journalism.
And it's fucking amazing, man. It's so good. Like,
oh, by the way, sorry to interrupt you. I forgot to mention again. Audibletrial.com/heavy is the thing I mentioned in the beginning, but I had forgotten to put it in the middle section. By spacing it out
so
like
professional.
This. Yeah, all right, go ahead.
Yeah, so... from the very first moment, you know, of Two Beginnings, one of the best opening tracks to an album and to a Pen of Salvation album, there's so much on there that you just couldn't hear on the original remix. Like, not just synth lines, which is something you'd expect, but all sorts of guitar touches. And once you hear them, you're like, oh yeah, I remember that being in the very background of the mix on the original album, but now it's really, really, really brought to the fore.
Yeah, I had
it's
that
amazing.
Same thing with the one track. Like, there were like, I was like, huh, this thing existed, huh? I never really paid attention to this.
Yeah, and it's suddenly so easy to separate everything. You know, that's one of the, for me, the most important quality of good mixes, the ability to separate different instruments and focus on them alone.
Mm-hmm.
I know I didn't invent that separation is a thing, right? For earphones as well, but this is so fucking good. And Gildenlaw sounds great. Bogren really fleshed out some of his nuances. Like on Of Two Beginnings, he has that grunts, right?
Mm-hmm.
When it fades away into the second verse. Like he goes, huh, and stuff like that. And Bogren really fleshed that out. You can really hear the full movement of his voice.
This really makes me want Entropia remaster. Because like...
that... I can't even think about that. I think they might go chronologically and go 1 hour before they go Entropia. But I would be so excited for Entropia remix. I listened to that as well this week. It's so good. I mean,
it's ridiculous.
I mean, we can't seem to be able to talk about Pen of Salvation without going to Entropia. But
yeah, I just divert it every time because I love that album so much.
It's truly one of the best albums ever made. Seriously, and it holds up so fucking well.
Yep.
So yeah, the remaster is really, really good, and I'm so excited about that. I was really not expecting it to be this good. And yeah, I'm gonna dive back to Remedy Lane, which is something I do every few months anyway. So,
all right. You know what does not feel good?
Acid?
Sure, yeah, but also the new Volumes song. So the Volumes have a new song called Feels Good.
And it's the same.
Yeah.
Have you ever heard the Volumes track? Then you've also heard this one.
No, wait. Volumes, like there's early Volumes, which was... well, regardless, Volumes have also fallen into this hole of that those bands who like... I forget the name, like... Northlane and what, like, all those bands have this thing where they have, you know, chuggy verse sections that don't really go anywhere. Like, the riff isn't a riff, it's just a chug without, like, direction, and then they have the chorus that, you know, sounds the same across all of these with the clean singing, and it's just weak. Like, when I listen to this type of music, this is a like whole separate issue, but when I listen to this type of music, it just doesn't leave anything with me. It's not that I don't enjoy it. I mean, it's fine. It's not terrible music. It's just that I'm like, okay, yeah, that's a thing. All right, moving on. Like, I don't feel any desire to go back to it, and it doesn't like incite anything in me.
One of the things that bothers me the most and is super blatant on this track is the divide between the subject matter of the lyrics and how the vocalist is singing them. I'm sorry, someone growling the words feel good does not make fucking sense. Like, maybe you should switch to clean here or sing about other stuff. I don't know. Growling, feel good, be positive and shit like that. It just doesn't fucking work, you know?
Or
I wish I could. Yeah.
They could just, you know, quit making music.
They could stop being a band. Yeah.
That works too.
That would be good.
Yeah.
Volumes, please stop.
Speaking of musicians stopping, this is a bit of a less feel-good story. So Joey Jordison came out and spoke up about why he quit Slipknot, because
I want to do like an intro to this before we get started.
Okay.
I don't know which word with P I was going to use.
Penis.
Just remember.
Prostate.
I just want penis this. So prolapse. So just before you hear this, remember the kind of hate that this guy got around this story. Like, this guy was one of the most detested people on the fucking planet and in the metal community. Okay, now go.
And like, there was a bunch of shit flinging between him and the band, and like fans like exaggerated that shit flinging to a new level. So anyway, Joey Jordison received the Metal Hammer Golden God Award, I think deservedly. Like, especially for the Metal Hammer scene, he's like, you know, one of the most talented dudes to have come out of that type of scene. Anyway, he got on stage to receive his award, and like, he was very, very appreciative and saying, you know, hey, I started in the basement of Des Moines, and then now I've accomplished so much in my life. And then he came out and said that he actually had a disease called transverse myelitis, which is something like multiple sclerosis, and it's like a nerve damaging disease, and he couldn't move his legs, and he was unable to play drums. So
yeah,
which is why
this really hits home, because my mother was falsely diagnosed with that.
Oh.
Like, she had, I won't go into her medical records here obviously, but she had like issue with, she used to be a very active person, mm-hmm. and then she had some sort of problem with her muscles, like atrophy in the legs, and that's what the doctors said that she has, and they were wrong completely. Like, she changed her diet and started doing Pilates and stuff like that, and she's still not 100%, but she doesn't fucking have that. But for a few months there, I was reading up on this thing, and it's the fucking worst. Like, these diseases, all the multiple sclerosis family type of diseases, it's just terrible. Like, you know that, obviously, you know One by Metallica.
Yeah.
So it's like that without the fucking mind. Like, you become trapped in your own body. It's just the worst nightmare. It's just terrible.
And he said that, you know, he did a lot of physical therapy and, you know, worked out a lot. And apparently he beat it. And, you know, he was motivational about it. He's like, hey, you know, I am proof that you can beat this. And your fans, well, whatever, you know, you can just read the statement, and I can't encapsulate the quality of this statement there. And apparently Corey Taylor tweeted at him saying, it's great to see you standing again, man, or something like that.
Yeah. And the one part of his story that I want to shine a light on is this crushing story of him having carried to stage. Because he couldn't get there physically, and they had to carry him to the kit for their last show, I think, or one of the last shows on that leg. Just imagine going through that, which is fucking disgraceful, embarrassing.
Yeah.
And then when you get kicked out of the band, all the fans that you thought, you know, were on your side fucking turn around on you.
Mm-hmm.
That's just terrible. I can't fucking imagine.
And like, I don't blame him at all for not wanting to talk about why he left the band, because like, it's scary and it's, you know, it's shame. You would feel ashamed. Like you don't want
to
talk.
You open up this insane vulnerability to complete strangers. Yep. I don't think I would have. I would have acted like he did.
So speaking of opening and completely strange things, Skrillex is opening for Guns N' Roses.
There's nothing really to say here. Yeah, this is like
the headline speaks for itself. Cast.
Yeah, like I liked Consequence of Sound reported on this, yep. And their subline, the subtitle is "What's the opposite of Paradise City?" And to be honest, like Skrillex used to be a good artist.
Yeah,
like
he wasn't from first to last.
Sorry,
he wasn't from first to last.
So when no, he started
that's
out,
not a joke. You know that's a band, and he was in that band.
Wait, right, I remember now.
Yeah, he was. Was he a vocalist? I don't remember what he.
Well, you lied. It was a joke.
No,
because the band was a joke.
Yeah, okay, the band's a joke, sure, but he was in the band for real.
So when he started out, like he did. Good stuff. Like he founded the genre. He pushed it forward. And I know that all the people who actually listen to dubstep don't like him and that they don't recognize the fact that he was the first, blah, blah, blah. But he was the most successful iteration of this genre, and he kept making some good music when he was famous. But then he totally sold out and went to shit. And now he's opening for Guns N' Roses, which...
I don't know who that reflects worse on. Like, is it bad that Skrillex is opening for Guns N' Roses or for Skrillex? Or for Guns N' Roses. I don't even know anymore. Like,
well, some of these shows also have Lenny Kravitz. And that's just...
Lenny Kravitz is fine. He's a talented guy. His music might not be the most amazing. But like, out of Skrillex and Guns N' Roses, like, I would... He's like an completely different class.
If I had to choose to listen... Like a music that I had to listen to for an hour, I would choose him over Guns N' Roses.
I would choose like 2 hours of Lenny Kravitz over half an hour of Skrillex or Guns N' Roses. He's fine. I like Lenny Kravitz. Okay. So, but like I don't know anymore which, what is worse. Like, Guns N' Roses has become such a joke. And like, Skrillex is this news. Why are we spending so much time on this shitty ass story?
I don't know. Move on.
Yeah. All right.
The news that doesn't suck.
Yeah. I'll let you take the rest of these.
Yeah. So, first of all, there's a stoner band called Sag. I think that's how you pronounce it. They're from Sweden.
Mm-hmm.
And they released a great album in 2014, which was one of the first albums I reviewed for the blog.
Was it not a stoner album?
It was.
But you said it's great.
Why do you ask? Fuck off, man. So I've been waiting a long time for them to announce something new. They do this like 70s stoner version of Mastodon, I guess you could call it. And now with Mastodon being bad, they can step in and do this properly. So they announced an album for the 23rd of September. It will be called Memento Mori, which is just, can we stop using Latin metal bands? You're bad at it. And there's a snippet for 30 seconds, sorry, but it's nothing.
I would like to hear a snippet for 30 songs.
At the same time. Yeah, so we don't really have music from it yet, but I'm really, really excited for this one. I really like the design on the cover art. It's quite sleek and cool. And that's it. Keep your eye out for this one, because it's most certainly will be, well, not most certainly, probably will be great.
If you like this kind of music.
If you like this kind of stuff. So the second thing I wanted to talk about is there are these two bands that are kind of like heavy blog core. But from the black metal grindcore extreme end of things. So one of them is...
I don't think they would qualify either as black metal or grindcore. Especially the Pyron is neither of those, I would say.
No, wait. Plebeian Grandstand is black metal.
Yes. Yeah, okay, fine. Kind of.
How do you classify Pyron?
Pyron is like that gorgutsy weird post-death metal thing.
Okay, whatever, fine. So both Pyron and Plebeian Grandstand are touring, which is really cool.
I won't take a grandstand on this issue.
Yeah, because you're plebeian.
Yeah.
Oh, you got one up. So this is cool because these are really like small bands that I think deserve a lot more listeners than they have now. Plebeian Grandstand released a great album this year, even though some people didn't like it. I did. Pyron released some really good stuff last year. So yeah, they're pretty much all over the place. Like, they have stuff in the East Coast and they have stuff on the West Coast. This is a real tour. This is not just them, you know, going on a weekend warrior run, as David put it last week, which is a great term. So yeah, go out, check them out if you'd like to. I'm not going to force you to do things, especially not things that cost money, except you should register for Audible.
Trial. That doesn't cost money. Audibletrial.com.
It doesn't. Heavy. Oh, nice.
Yeah, exactly. It's free.
So this last one,
like, free money.
This last one is yours.
Yeah, Brain Drill. So, I like Brain Drill. I like Brain Drill more than your average person, I would say. I mean, considering there are, like, you know, what, 7 billion people in the world? How many of them like Brain Drill? Like, come on. Anyway, so this song is weird. They have a new song, by the way. That's the context here. Infinite Oblivion. Presumably they're making a new album, and this song is from that. I mean, you know, math. Oh, you can get the album now from braindrill666.bandcamp.com, apparently. Nice URL there, guys. no, actually, you can only get the song. You can't get the album yet. That's a lie. Thanks, guys. July 2 is the release date. Anyway, this song is interesting because Brain Drill are known for being, like, one of the two most over-the-top technical death metal bands, along with Vremia.
Yeah.
And while this is still ridiculously over-the-top, it also feels like they've kind of toned it back a little bit to add more to their sound. Like, there's synths and there's a bit more riffing that is not just like sweeps and ridiculousness and like gravity blasts all the time. So while I don't mind this and it sounds fine, I'm slightly sad in that, like, Brain Drill were one of the guys who were, like, pushing it to the point of, like, being considered kind of a joke.
And they backed up.
Yeah. Like, because there's, like, who else is there to do this? Vremia isn't really a band anymore, and Brain Drill aren't doing it. Like, Slaughterbox was another band, and they had, like, one album, and then they disbanded. So
Artificial Brain?
No, it's not the same thing. Artificial Brain is basically, like, modern Demi Lich. They're not like type of things, like a Nintendo console that going wild type of sound. Yeah, so I don't know. Someone needs to step up and, like, fill the void left by this, I guess. And to be fair, this is, like, the last song of the album, apparently, and it's the only thing we've heard so far. So for all we know, it's, you know, the rest of the album is regular.
Yeah, the one and only break.
Yeah, so we'll see. I'm not disappointed, really. I like the song. It's just that I need more of that, like, over-the-top, stupid-ass technical death metal.
So, for the first time in a few weeks, we're going to actually discuss topics.
Yeah.
That aren't news or interviews or stuff like that.
Yes, we are.
Where do you want to start?
Man. Well, okay. Since we already spoke about them quite a bit, and I'm looking for excuses to make you talk more about it, let's do a balls deep on Gojira.
Let's do it.
Okay.
So,
I like the collective
sigh.
This
is making me fucking depressed. Like, this is even worse than just thinking about the new album, because I have to think about how good they used to be.
Yeah.
So, okay, I don't want to get on, like, a high horse and say, this generation, fucking millennials, blah, 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 blah. But somewhere along the way, people kind of lost track on how fucking important this band is. Like, the context in which their first albums were released and the context of their sound back then.
I agree, man. Altars of Madness was a really important album.
Fuck off.
Okay, so wait. Let me explain that joke, because every joke is better when explained. Yeah. Early Gojira is, like, super, super similar to Morbid Angel, to the point that, like, some aspects are, like, ripoffs, like the fucking pick scrape thing they do, which everyone's like, oh, that's Gojira's thing. No, Morbid Angel did that, like, decades ago. And, like, so Altars of Madness is obviously the most influential Morbid Angel album, so that was the joke there.
So I think that actually feeds into what I want to say about Terra Incognita, which is, it's an album that has one hand in the metal that came before it, but then it kind of grabs it and puts it in the present, right?
That's some weird shit in there.
yeah, there's some weird stuff, but there's also some really accessible stuff and some really groovy stuff. And that's exactly what I'm talking about. So this came out in 2001,
mm-hmm.
which is like a really crucial year for metal, a really crucial few years. Some of them say that it's like a bad time, but also a lot of stuff began to grow around that time. And suddenly, this album, which didn't garner, you know, widespread attention, but it was spread by aficionados and people in the know. It has so much weird stuff on it.
Yeah.
Like, you know, what's that song called? 5,988 trillions the ton.
Yep.
Which is this instrumental weird ass part, and the sample at the beginning of Fire Is Everything, which is literally just fire
mm-hmm.
eating away at things. But then it has Love.
Yep.
Right? Which is one of the most dirty, heavy, groove-inducing tracks out there. Like, that track is so massive.
Yeah, and the album is like, I think a lot of Gojira fans who like came in with The Way of All Flesh or whatever kind of like underrate the album in that they're like, oh, you know, that's the old stuff. It's not as accessible as, you know, how they sound now. So whatever, it's not as good. But I think that's doing disservice to the album, because like, think about 2001 and like this is some shit for 2001, and it still holds up. I think like I just recently listened to this album like many times for a few days, and it's good. Like it's amazing.
It's really good. And like, just to maybe clarify what I was saying, it has all these, it makes the weird parts more accessible by having those groove-oriented tracks, like Love, Space Time, yeah, Deliverance, unlike Clone.
Another certain album by them, like, it's a very balanced album.
Exactly, balanced, that's the word I was looking for. Like, it has both sides of the equation, both older stuff, which is more accessible and, like, you know, rips off Morbid Angel, let's face it, but then also weird stuff, and it kind of feeds you into that weird stuff. It's the structure is well-designed, unlike a certain album, mm-hmm. It leads you into the weird places instead of just throwing them at you and saying, oh, this is the weird part, please feel artistic now. It just is artistic. It just is, you know, them doing whatever the fuck they want. So it's a really, really, really good album, and it's so underrated.
So The Link is what brought me into Gojira. And like, it's again, like a really interesting album, because it has the, again, Morbid Angel, Rapoffy thing, but then they start doing their weird cleanish vocal thing, and there's mm-hmm. a bunch of like world instrument stuff. What was the name of that song that started with the Death of Me? I don't remember the name of the songs from this album, but I know,
yeah, Death of Me.
I know Remembrance. So Remembrance was the first song I ever heard by these guys, and I was like, oh, this is really cool. And then I got to the end part, the like odd time breakdown, and it was like, huh, wow, people do stuff like this, that's interesting. I should pay attention to this band. And then I realized they just play in drop D, which drop D is my like favorite tuning. And until I got like extended range guitars, I used to play in drop D all the time, and I was like, oh hey, I should play this stuff by these guys. And it really, you know, helped me develop as a player as well. And again, this is like Terra Incognita, but less weird. But it's what is lost through weirdness, they cover it up by just really solid songwriting.
I think that this is the album where Gojira was born.
Yeah.
Like the Gojira as we know it, because it has all the elements. It has the beginning of the environmentalist message, which isn't really on Terra Incognita.
Despite
it
the
has
name.
Some hints. Despite the name, yeah. It has some hints, but this album has it like full blown. It introduces the world instruments, which would later on be a very important part of Gojira, and it introduced the massiveness,
yep.
right? The epicness of Gojira, like embrace the world. That part, you know, at the end, I embrace the world, and then when he changes the beat,
yes.
of where he transitions from the first syllable to the second one, that's mastery right there. Like,
yep.
just thinking about that I can change the rhythm of the syllables within the sentence to do something interesting with my voice, that's something that metal bands should still study. Like, how you can do interesting things with your vocals, even if you're not doing, you know, melismas and weird scales and stuff like that. And
I was just, slight tangent, but on this, I think, was it Wednesday, Tuesday? Me and in Carthage, we played a show, live show, and there was this band that opened before us, and they were this like local genty band. I don't remember their name, but they tried to do these like odd time breakdown things, right? But it was just like uninteresting and killed the song because they were like, okay, now we're gonna go into this thing and, you know, show you how syncopated we can play. But if you look at the ending of Remembrance, it's ridiculous. It's really heavy. The whole song builds up to it, and like, it's actually pretty interesting technically. Like, it's not just playing in 4/4 with some, you know, some mutes. It's like a weird time signature, and the drums are also a part of it. You know, at the end of the thing, they just do a ta 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 thing.
Yeah,
like, it's a fucking amazing way to do that type of thing, and it like, it's just really striking how ahead of the game they were there, and still they are with that song.
And I think that that flow is indicative of the rest of the album as well. Mm-hmm. I think that the album flows amazingly, and the epitome of that is Dawn. Like, it's a perfect closer track. It's so fucking heavy, like, the way that it starts. It's so aggressive. It sets you up for this massive, massive fucking riff. And unlike a certain album, it leaves you with a taste, not for more albums, but for more of itself, yeah. Right? You want to play it again. You want to... What the hell just happened to me, right? You need to go back and listen to it. And there are so many interesting moments on this album. That will actually be something that I will point out in the next album, because I think it's the one that
before
has...
Before the next the album, most... there's something else, though. The Link Alive.
Oh, right, yeah. That is important. That was my laptop shutting off, by the way. Sorry.
The Link Alive is their live DVD/CD of them playing material from Terra Incognita in The Link. And it's amazing. It's really good.
Yeah, it's really good. I think this is how I was introduced to the band. I was sitting with a few friends, and then someone put on the live version of Wisdom Comes, which to this day is the heaviest fucking thing. And I was blown away. I'm like, what the fuck was that? I need to listen to that.
Also, I want to point out that both The Link and The Link Alive have like the best artwork.
Oh yeah, definitely.
It's amazing. It's like, it's so striking. Like, that's what like actually made me check them out. I saw them in like the shop and I was like, huh, interesting.
And let me just, you know, shout out again, Wisdom Comes. Mm-hmm. I think that on that track, they've done, oh, how do I want to phrase this? I want to do an Opeth comparison.
Okay.
Like, when Opeth decides to double down and be super heavy, they're never as super heavy as this. Like, Wisdom Comes is the perfect track exemplifying the method of melody, 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 and then this insanely heavy part which really captures you. I think that Wisdom Comes is the best track I've heard of that kind of style. And just listening to Wisdom Comes now and then to fucking Magma...
yep.
Makes me depressed.
Actually, the Opeth comparison you make also makes me think of Deliverance by Opeth, and the ending of that song also has like a...
Yeah, definitely. That ties into Remembrance.
Yeah, exactly. Right? I was going to make that connection. It sounds like that. Yeah. So, From Mars to Sirius is their next album. And I think this is the album where they got noticed by people in the know, air quotes.
Yeah.
They got big
this
within
is
the
scene. This is the breakthrough album.
Yeah. The Way of All Flesh is their like mainstream breakthrough, but this is like, mainstream within the metal community, but this is their breakthrough to like... I mean, IMNs didn't exist at the time, but like whatever the equivalent of that is.
So I feel like this is the culmination of the first chapter of Gojira.
Mm-hmm.
You could argue that Terra Incognita is its own chapter, but either way, this is the end of the chapter that was started just an album ago with The Link.
Yeah.
And this sees them like perfecting the sound that was introduced on The Link, almost in a way that makes me feel like they recorded The Link and said to themselves, this is 50% of our sound. We're not good enough to do the rest of the 50%. Mm-hmm. Like, we are not yet at the place to reintroduce the complexity and weirdness and interesting parts that were on Terra Incognita. We'll do that next album. And then that's what happened with From Mars to Sirius. It has on one end like the epic heavy vibe of the link.
The heaviest, but it also metal, has, in fact.
Oh, yeah. Nice. Cool reference. You really left me in the wilderness, though.
Yeah.
So, and then on this album, they brought their hands together and reintroduced some of the weirdness. Like, for example, From Mars.
Yep.
Did you ever stop and think how fucking weird that track is?
Yep.
It's just so weird.
Like this album. Okay, so for totally random reasons that I have no actual explanation for, I like The Link more than this one. Because it's just like, historically for me, The Link was, you know, more important for me in the time. And then, yeah. But I think this album is amazing. And like, they also had their... I had a video for one of these songs. Which song was the one that had the video? Do you remember?
I don't remember.
Anyway, like, yeah, this album was something else. And here, like, they really doubled down on their thematic things. I mean, The Link had the themes as well, but this one is even more laden with theme. And the song names and, like, the artwork. This album is, like, a very standout album, like, even within the career of a band as standout as Gojira. Like, this album, as you said, it's the culmination of their first chapter.
Yeah, definitely.
And then we have The Way of All Flesh. So this is, I guess, the beginning of the second chapter of Gojira, and this is where they got really, really big. And I actually, I saw them live. It was the first show I saw when I came to America. It was like 2009. Yeah. So it was an amazing show. Like, it was a very small venue. I thought I was going to die. Anyway, so this album had, you know, them having a lot more pristine production, bigger marketing, and I think they didn't change labels. Okay. It had Toxic Garbage Island, which was like a really striking track, and it was amazing. And it had like Adoration for None with Randy Blythe. And that was a really strong track as well. And like, this album, so it's weird. I think this album is technically better than The Way of All Flesh. It's better produced.
Better than
From Mars to Sirius. Yeah. It's better produced. It's more consistently written, like more professionally written, I guess. And, you know, more mature, air quotes. Take that however you will. Obviously, it's lacking in the rawness of their first chapter, but I think it's still a really good album, and I'm sure that a lot of IMN people would say that this is one of the best albums of all time, and I would not dispute that.
Yeah, I like this album, but I do feel that it has maybe indicative of their future.
Yes.
A few extra tracks that shouldn't have been there, like The Silver Cord. Comes right after Yama's Messengers, which is also a non-standard track. And those two tracks, like the first three tracks, Ouroboros, Toxic Garbage Island, and A Sight to Behold, are so hype inducing.
Yep.
And then Yama's Messengers and The Silver Cord and All the Tears as well kind of sever that tie. And so you get two parts of the album and you don't really benefit from that division.
I think,
and then you're right back into it with Adoration for None. There's a jolt there in the middle.
I think this is kind of weird to say, but Magma and L'Enfant Sauvage make this album retroactively worse.
Yeah, you see the beginning of these trends that would lead to those two albums and their problems.
Yeah.
It's still a really, really, really good album, and I would also not dispute anyone who says this is one of the best metal albums released, but it doesn't have the same... I don't have the same intimate connection that I have with...
Yeah, it feels like, you know, it feels like the thing where it's season 3 and they've gone pro, you know.
Yeah, definitely. And I was actually surprised to learn that there are not a lot of people, but some people out there don't like this album.
Really? Why?
Like, they've signed on to this narrative of this is where they sold out. Like, this is where the decline began.
I mean, this is... I would not dispute that this is where they went really commercial, but I don't think that they... lost too much for it.
And you can't really say that this album is a compromise in any way.
Like, yeah.
The Art of Dying, the track itself, and Adoration for None, Esoteric Surgery, these are fucking no compromise. And the way that Ouroboros opens the album, yep. with one of the most iconic Gojira lines ever. So
yeah, and Toxic Garbage Island, the riff in that, like the build-up in the intro of that song is ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have L'Enfant Sauvage.
This is the beginning of the end.
Okay, so full-on confession here. I only listened to this album like 2 times ever because I just can't.
Yeah, I tried to listen to it. Like, I really wanted to like it. But it just, it wasn't meant to be. Oh, actually, you know what we need to talk about? We need to talk about the Sea Shepherd EP.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
Because that's chronologically before.
Oh, but, and they also apparently, I did not know this, they had a The Flesh Alive live DVD. I don't know how it is. I'm sure it's fine.
I haven't listened to it.
Yeah, so they, but in between, I think, was it after The Way of All Flesh or before that?
The way after.
Okay. So they had the, was it Salt and Fight? I forget the name.
Blood and Salt.
Of Blood and Salt. So okay, you
this EP, so this EP was supposed to be, they entered the studio in early November 2010, and they were supposed to record this 4-song EP, which was Non for Profit, where all the proceeds were supposed to go to Sea Shepherd, which is, if you're not aware, is an organization that tracks whalers.
Yeah.
And they're like one of the most militant environmentalist organizations out there. Like, they board whaler ships and they fight them and stuff like that. So this was supposed to have all the fucking guests. Like, it was supposed to have Devin Townsend, Fredrik Thordendal from Meshuggah, Randy Blythe, Anders Frieden, Jonas Renkse from Catatonia, and Max Cavalero. And then we got one track
with Devin.
Of Blood with Devin and Fredrik Thordendal doing a guest solo. And it was just the best thing ever. Yes. It's such an amazing track. And then the EP disappeared. There hasn't been a release of it yet. From what I gather, whenever they're asked about it in interviews, they completely dodge the question. I don't know what went down there. Maybe there was a legal issue. Maybe there was a problem with Sea Shepherd. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Release this EP. Like, Of Blood and Salt. I can only listen to that track on YouTube. That makes me depressed.
Yep.
I want to buy this track. I want to buy the EP and listen to it. And just a small shout out here, which is not super, you know, our main focus. Devin fucking Townsend with his goddamn guest vocals, which are the best thing ever. Yep. Like the Hollow Shores track that we spoke about a few weeks ago. Just everything this guy touches instantly becomes fucking amazing. And this track, like Of Blood and Salt, is better than any other track they've released after it.
Yep, I definitely agree with that. 100%. It's an amazing track. Also, reverse shout out to the Devin guest spot. Around that time, Joe Duplantier joined Cavalera Conspiracy for their first album, and he played bass on that album, and he even had he did vocals on one of the songs, Ultraviolet. And being a huge Cavalera fan, I really like this album, and like his influence was heard on like Ultraviolet, and that was also like a really good song that was better than anything they did after. But yeah, the Inflicted album is really good. Listen to him.
So in 2012, Roadrunner acquired Gojira.
Maybe that's the trend. Maybe.
So yeah, someone in the comments to my review, actually now I'm remembering, said Roadrunner destroys bands.
Opeth?
Now, yeah, I started looking back and I said, wait, that can't be true. And I looked at the current roster and it's shit. Like, I don't know if this is bands that necessarily were good before they signed to them and now suck, or if they just sucked always, but their roster is super unimpressive. And this is one of the biggest labels out there today. And like, why? So
okay, wait, let's quickly go through this. Yeah, Dream Theater is on them and they're not great now.
Code Orange, a lot of people that went from Code Orange Kids, a lot of people say their latest album is a sellout.
Killswitch Engage, their latest albums are very weak, but they've been on Roadrunner since day one, so I guess it doesn't count.
King.
Fucking King.
810. Fuck that band. Fuck everybody in that band, and I'm not gonna fucking waste a second on them. But Kvelotak just released a really disappointing album. The Marmosets album, released in 2004, 14 was really, I liked it, but a lot of the fans were disappointed, and so was I a bit. They used to be really cool mathcore from the UK, like really interesting and original, and then their album is just literally indie rock. It's good, but it's the complete 180 turn, and the rest of these bands,
Trivium are fine,
Slipknot, Trivium,
their latest album disappointed a lot, including me, but I think they're still fine, and they've made their best albums while on Roadrunner as well, so yeah.
So they have Wildthorn, which is a really big surprise to me. I like this band. This is maybe the one band on this list that I really, really, really like, and they released a great album this year. But the rest of them are like, who are these artists and why are they on the biggest label in the fucking world? Like, what's
going on? I mean,
going
through their roster, it doesn't look as big as it used to, honestly.
Yeah, I expected to keep scrolling, right? I expected to find like pages and pages of artists, and it's just
like,
not
a lot
the
of
case.
The artists on here aren't as noteworthy as, like, I don't know, 5-10 years ago.
Yeah, definitely. So, L'Enfant Sauvage. The Wild Child. It's not wild. Might be a child, but it's not.
The
it
only
sucks.
The only wild child in metal is Alexi Laiho.
Definitely. So, I'll say this for this album. At least it's not Magma. You thought I forgot, but I didn't. Yeah. At least it's not fucking Magma. Like, there are more good tracks on this. So you have Explosia.
Yeah, and Gift of Guilt, I guess.
Gift of Guilt, Liquid Fire, and maybe if I'm in a good mood, Pain is a Master. And the rest is flat. Just flat as all hell. Like, I don't even remember how these tracks sound.
Yeah, I remember what I thought of them sounding when I listened to it. And it was take the Way of All Flesh and then take the exciting parts out from the songs.
Yeah, and unlike you, I'm not saying that as criticism. Yeah, sure. I tried to listen to this album. It was on my, like, you know, mobile device where I listened to music. I tried to play it when I was, you know, it was in a time in my life that I rode a lot of buses. And I just couldn't, it didn't grab me. I couldn't remember anything from it. Like, I remember listening to Explosia. I was, like, rocking out and, fuck yeah, this is a great track. And then I would wake up on The Gift of Guilt and be like, oh yeah, this is also a good track. But wait, hold on, there were, like, 5 tracks before this and six. And I don't remember what they sound like. Like, I would totally space out. Just look at the scenery around me, around the bus and stuff like that. And I couldn't, even a month later, where I had listened to the album, you know, more than 10 times, I couldn't, if you played Shuffle and not shown me the track names and said, which track is this? I would be like, I have no fucking idea. I know that it's between Explosion and The Gift of Guilt. But that's about it. And I listened to Pain is a Master and Born in Winter and The Fall, the last 3 tracks, like maybe 2 times, even though I hit play on the beginning of the album 20 times. I just couldn't get to the end. It was lacking.
Yep.
And I think that the thing that was most missing to me was the epicness. Where are those larger-than-life moments? Where are those huge fucking riffs that swallow you?
For me, it was the heaviness.
Yeah, it's kind of the same. Like, the heaviness also translates to this sensation of grandness, right? Being in the presence of something massive. And it just didn't have this. It was flat.
And, like, it feels like they really fell in love with these ambient-ish, like, space out sections that they keep doing. They and feels like they just were like, okay, this stuff sounds good, let's do this for 3 minutes straight. It just kills it after a while.
Like, tying back into what I said in the beginning about Magma, what I said in my review, it's not super clear here, but maybe just the beginning of it, you know, the focus on the aesthetics. And the music video, there was like a music video for 2 or 3 tracks, and they were all super artistic and deep and stuff like that. So it didn't bother me with this release as much as it did on Magma, but still, it's like the beginning of this fascination of Gojira with Gojira, right?
Mm-hmm.
the beginning of the fascination with who they are and how they sound, instead of making music, like defining how they sound by how they sound, and not with teaser tracks and tons of music videos and stuff like that. It's just, yeah.
Yep.
Depressing. Oh, sorry, there were 5 music videos. Explosia, L'Enfant Sauvage, The Axe, Liquid Fire, Born in Winter.
Meh.
No.
So talk about Magma.
I've said all I have to say about that.
Like, talking about them deflates me almost as much as listening to them does.
Yeah, definitely. Do we have time for one more topic?
I feel like the listeners deserve a short episode after, like, back-to-back long episodes.
Yeah.
But we can tease a topic for next time.
Oh, yeah.
Unless we get overwhelmed...
And would you say we can hype it?
Yeah. Unless we get overwhelmed by news or randomly have an interview out of nowhere, then the topic we'll talk about would be hype culture. And, you know, we've complained about this a few times before, like how, you know, the jizz metaphors and like how it creates a weird sensation around albums and stuff like that. So, yeah, if you want us to address a particular part of this issue, then just leave us a comment. And yeah, because I mean, I think we know what we're going to say about the issue, but sometimes we get a little bit closed in our own minds in this podcast.
So you know, this is the live episode, right? This is the raw episode, and we have 10 minutes left, give or take,
whatever.
Let's do a state of the podcast.
Okay, let's do it.
Let's tell our listeners how we feel,
yeah,
where the podcast is at, and then you guys can use this as an excuse to review us on iTunes.
Yes.
you start.
Well, I mean, you started the topic. I don't know what you want to talk about, so you go first.
I'll start. So, I don't know how many of you listen to other podcasts. I assume a bunch of you, but 35 episodes isn't that much in podcast numbers, but it's also not... the beginning, right? It's not the first chapter of the podcast.
Yeah, like it's beyond the point of where it's let's try this out. And it's the point where we're like, okay, we're committed to this.
Yeah, definitely. And as far as reception has been, I'm happy. I think you're happy as well. Like, we have a good number of steady listeners, a good number of subscribers. Recently, over the last few weeks, we started seeing people commenting more. On the Facebook shares and on the blog itself, which is fantastic. And I feel like you and I have hit a sort of stride and a sort of dynamic, which we sometimes fall to the wind because that's important, like on this episode. And yeah, I'm pleased with that part and with the attention that we've been garnering so far. But I also think that we can do a lot more. I think that Audible is a good step forward, but it's also up to our listeners. Like, every time I read a review or see a comment, one of the common themes is, this is the only metal podcast where, you know, there's no bullshit, right? And we just do, a more intelligent analysis of things, which is just like what Heavy Blog is about generally. And I would really... like it if you would go one step further than, you know, leaving a comment or reviewing us. Those are great things and we really appreciate it, but if you can share it, that is really the best thing you can do for us. I don't know if any of you do, like, you know, Facebook marketing and stuff like that. Share is the king of everything. It's the king of engagement, the king of reach, the king of all that stuff. And it's also a really good chance to have these sort of discussions, and this is my point, with your friends. Like, the goal with this podcast is not that we send out our voices into the ether and then we get likes back. Our egos are big enough as it is. The goal here is that you take these points onwards and you have these conversations within your own circles. Have them with us, sure, but also have them with your friends. Like, share this podcast, tag people, say, what do you think about this? What did you think about Magma? What do you think about, you know, the role of hype culture and metal, or Or what do you think about metal in general? Like, I think if there's one goal that ties the podcast and the blog together, is the desire to have this community more active, more engaged in discussion about the problems that plague it. And if you don't think that the metal community is plagued by problems, then you haven't been listening for 35 episodes. So yeah, just that was a long rant, but I just wanted to say that I would really like to see a community forming around this podcast. I would really like to get questions from you, suggestions. We always comment on Facebook and on the blog posts. We sometimes take a while because we're busy people, but we get to it. And if you suggest stuff that you want to listen to, we will get to it at some point.
Yes.
And if we could like make a community happen around this thing and then carry it forward, and you know, that shitty movie with the kid from AI, pay it forward, right? If just three of you started a discussion with three of your friends about these issues, we might have something really cool here.
Yeah. So when creating the podcast, like one of my primary goals was to create more of a community sensation around Heavy Blog, because like we've mentioned this before, where the age of social media is kind of killing the blog. And, you know, we had serious conversations about whether, you know, what's the future of the blog going to be. And, you know, I was like, hey, we should do a podcast because that will let us diversify and also, you know, give us another outlet for us to interact with our listeners. And I think it's been going pretty good so far. Though I would definitely, as Eden said, like to, I definitely love seeing more engagement from people involved with the podcast because, well, A, it's self-validation, but it's also, it's also gives me the sense that there is like this community is happening and, you know, we're reaching people because there are metrics that I can look at to see, you know, how many people are downloading the episodes, like clicking on it or whatever, but that doesn't like, to me, that doesn't translate to like humans, right? Like
yeah.
Maybe it's because I'm not a Facebook marketer, but like I like seeing the flesh and blood, right? So the comments, the whatever people say, even if it's not a super positive comment, and sometimes that's helpful because sometimes we fuck up and we need correcting, right? Like that's like a really big deal to me. So yeah, please, and also if you enjoy the podcast, then you know, message me on Facebook, and you know, we want to talk about something, whatever. Like we're open people, we're human beings, and we enjoy talking about these issues. That's why we're doing this. So, yeah.
My profile on Facebook, by the way, is always set to 100% public. So if you want to post something and message me or stuff like that, just hit me up. We would love to speak with you guys.
Please post about last week's dank fact on Eden's wall.
Please do. I guess. I'm going to regret this. So the last thing... I want to say two more things. One... We're not going to open the numbers for you because that's a bit crass. Yeah. But just so you know, in case anybody out there is wondering, we're not big.
Yes.
Like, if you take this, and I'm not blaming you, God forbid, if you take this podcast for granted, it's not for granted. Like, we could, and again, I'm not threatening you or anything, I'm just saying how it is, we could stop next week because we both have a million things, and this podcast is not like it's, you know, the biggest viral thing out there.
Yeah.
So... if you're thinking, if you're like saying, oh, I don't need to support them because they have, other people will do it. No. Like, if you don't do it, then no one else will. Like, there aren't.
It's on a weekly basis. It takes time and effort. And with, you know, both of us having at least one full-time job and living like halfway across the world, it is, you know, not always really easy to get something going. Like, there have been several weeks where we almost didn't have content.
Yeah. And the last thing I want to say is that we do have plans, right? This is not going to be the format forever, right? These sort of things take time. They take time to get them smooth between Noyan and I, and to get them smooth with guests. I feel like interviews is a place where we do really, really well and we want to do more of them. But we also have a lot of other things planned. Like, we have this untapped resource, which is the rest of the blog staff. Yep. We'll see how we assimilate them into this and bring them on as guest spots. I'm not saying next episode. I'm not saying in 5 episodes. I'm saying in the future, if we can make this thing last. We have a lot of really interesting ideas of stuff that we can do
with already the format of the podcast is different from when it started in several ways.
Yeah, definitely. So, yeah. Well, as always, thanks for listening. We still have the cool people section, yes. But I'll just say this now. Thanks for listening. If you like or comment or share, and even if you just download it and listen to it on your way to your boring, boring, boring job. Thank
you. Smash that share button, though.
Yeah, hit that motherfucking like. Real internet metal nerd hours.
Yeah.
Who the fuck up?
Show your dedication to us by sacrificing your Facebook wall to us. Anyway, so cool people section. So E3 happened this week, and there's a lot of stuff to go over, but I'll just like boil it down to a few things that I particularly cared about. I think the biggest thing, did you follow E3, Eden?
Yeah, some of it. Not, I didn't go super deep.
So the biggest thing in E3 for me was the Resident Evil 7 reveal. Did you catch that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I was watching that live and I was like, what the fuck is this? This looks like PT. And like, I knew that Resident Evil 7 was going to be announced at this E3, right? But I was like, no, this can't be RE7, right? This looks nothing like it. And then it happens. Like, it's like a really amazing, interesting trailer. And then on screen, it shows 7. And I'm still like, what does the 7 stand for? That's a weird name for a game. And then Resident Evil pops up and I just lose it. Like, that was a very amazing moment for me. And it's coming out in like VR. Like, that's so cool. And the demo is free to download on PS4. You can actually go and play it right now. And it's like really interesting, and it's a different direction for the series, but I'm really interested in seeing where they take that. I don't know if you have any thoughts on that. If not, I'll just keep rambling.
I was never a big fan of Resident Evil, mm-hmm. but it's one of the most crucial game series out there, yeah. right? Super important for all sorts of stuff.
It's Capcom's top-selling series of all time. Like, it's what keeps that company alive.
Yeah.
Also, the God of War reveal was really interesting in that I knew that there was going to be a God of War reveal, but it was so different from what I was, and I don't care about the God of War games at all, but it was so different from what I was expecting that I was just shocked. And now I'm like, show me more. I'm interested.
Yeah, this is like a series that is
dumb,
kind of dead. It's dumb, but it's also lost a lot of its flash and a lot of it what made it originally interesting. Because the first one was like, oh shit, you play as a god and all these mechanics and cool moves and stuff like that. But then the second one and third one.
Like six God of War games up till now.
Yeah. So, I don't know, maybe they can change things up a bit.
Also, the Prey reveal was very interesting. I don't know if you caught that.
I didn't catch that
one. So it was on Bethesda's conference. You're familiar with the original Prey?
Yeah.
And are you familiar with the failed sequel to it?
Yeah.
It looked like a very Blade Runner interesting game. So they rebooted the Prey franchise, and the trailer for it is really cool. So what happens is, like, it's a CGI trailer, so there's nothing about the game yet, but your character wakes up and like there's this AI that says, hey, good morning, whatever, and blah blah blah, right? And then you click the mirror. And then he does a few things, and then it repeats and repeats. Like, it's like good morning every day. And things start getting weirder and weirder. So there's this like Groundhog Day vibe to it, and then some AI vibes, and then it shows footage of like shadows and monsters. And, like, it looks like a really weird, interesting sci-fi thing, and from what I understand, it's basically supposed to be like a spiritual successor to System Shock.
Oh, that's always a good
thing. Yeah, so it's really interesting. The new Zelda game looks really interesting. They've completely changed up the formula and like followed the trends of like survival games.
Open world.
And what?
Open
world. Yeah, open world, survival elements, physics puzzles. Like, it looks like like the most original game Nintendo has made since like forever.
So how long are you gonna ignore the fetus in the room?
The fetus in the room?
Yeah.
Oh, speaking of, by the way, Hideo. I have a news item that I wanted to talk about, but I forgot. Dying Fetus are releasing a new album. They released a studio video with no footage yet. Yeah. Go back to cool people.
The new Hideo game?
Oh, Death Stranding. So, okay, I just completely forgot about that thing. It's so weird. I have no idea what to think of it. But yeah, it looks really weird and interesting.
Yeah, it's just, what the fuck? And at this point in the gaming industry's life, like, that guy could do anything and have everyone super hyped.
And that's what he did. He did, like, something that's, like, anything, and everyone got super hyped. Deservedly so.
Yeah.
Like, his, and like, they introduced him like a god, and he walked down the aisle like a god, and it was amazing.
I just love how many memes there are about this. Like, there's one of him sipping a drink, and it says Konami tears.
My favorite E3 meme is it's an Overwatch meme. It says play of the game Sony, and it shows like a footage of like Sony's stage. And then it shows the like kid from the God of War trailer, and then he walks towards the shadow, and Kratos walks out of the shadow and says, "Eliminated Microsoft, eliminated Nintendo." It's like, it was really good, because that moment was like a big, big shocker for me. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I knew it was going to be God of War, but again, still, like, both Resident Evil 7 and God of War, I knew what was coming, yet I still didn't see it. Like, it was pretty impressive. Yeah. So, speaking of video game videos, I think you have something to talk about.
So, I always knew this guy existed. He's a cool dude by the internet name of Donkey.
With a U instead of an O?
With a U, yeah. And he was one of the original League of Legends YouTubers. And then a year ago, he very openly shit all over League of Legends after they had shit all over him. And said, like, I'm the top guy making videos for this game, like, for 4 years now. And you just completely fucked me over on this thing. Like, he's a very, how would I say it, aggressive guy with his chatting and stuff like that. And he really tore into someone, and they banned him. So he emailed them, literally, just unblock me so I can make my final video, and then I'll just fuck off. And they said, no, you're toxic. So... And ever since then, he's always been doing, you know, videos that aren't League of Legends, but he's focusing on general video games, and now he's getting into Overwatch, and he's so funny.
Yeah, his, like, that intro kind of doesn't explain how he is now. It's like kind of like critical in that, like, he plays games and like captures bizarre, hilarious moments and has like really understated, hilarious commentary about them.
Yeah, I think it's impossible to describe what's so good about him. Like, his voice, the voice that he does. And I think he also captures a lot of what is fun about games. Like, entering a video game and then just asking yourself, how can I fuck this game up as much as I can?
The one where he plays the, like, the platformer game with, like, cats and, like, saws.
With the rats.
The rats, I don't remember that they had, like, that video destroys me. Like, he plays with other people.
That's amazing. Like,
I don't want to spoil it, but I'll put a link to it in the video.
It's amazing. Like, his entire channel is amazing. And like I said, I didn't discover him, but I kind of, he made an Overwatch video, which I'm really into, mm-hmm. as you know. And it was so funny. I couldn't stop laughing. Like, the part where he's saying, "Congratulations, Soldier 76. You have been selected for my special program where I spawn camp you for the rest of the game." And then he proceeds to spawn camp this guy into fucking oblivion. Yep. It's just amazing.
Yeah, that
it's
video amazing. Is great. Yeah, Donkey's amazing in general.
The last thing I like about him, he's obviously a very good mm-hmm. gamer, but he posts tons of stuff about him getting owned. Like, him getting destroyed and killed and just sucking in general, and that's so honest to me, and it's amazing. Like, he has this thing in the Overwatch video where he's trying to headshot Genji over his deflect with Widowmaker to make a stupid joke about how he made his day because she's a Widowmaker.
Yeah, and like, he keeps setting the joke, like, because like, he's clearly just gonna use that snippet, right? So he keeps doing the punchline and then takes the shot, and then it gets deflected back at him and he dies, and it happens like several times, and each time you hear him setting up the punchline beforehand. Great.
I'm about to make, and then he dies. It's just amazing.
Also, he's part
so
of
good.
Like Ethan from H3's crew, so like, they have
some
videos
he
together.
Did the Jontron rant about how the bird is Jontron.
Yep.
And then when he played on Overwatch, he recommended that Jontron take Bastion, and then just super zoomed in on the bird.
These are so niche memes, man.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah, but I'll put a link to some of the good stuff in the video.
So I don't want to talk about the last thing that I wrote down. I'll do it next
week. Oh, but do talk about it briefly, please. I have a thing.
Okay, so... this is not a niche thing. Yeah. This is another podcast called Welcome to Night Vale. And I'm a huge, 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 huge fan. And they just finished their fourth year. And this is something which is a lot of people that I know avoid because it's so hyped. And some of the people that hype it can be, oh, by the way, reference to our next topic. And some of the people that hype it can be very ignorant of the fact that it's not the first thing ever done within the genre. That's
always like, the worst with hype culture.
Like Lovecraft existed. Yep. This sort of low-key horror where knowledge is insanity and
also,
everything is weird.
It's intimidating because there's a lot of it and it's plot-based. So, like, there's...
Yeah, I agree. It's so good, man. It's like this podcast has... It's been important to my life. Like, it helped me through a lot of bad times because it has this... You know how you get these people who are... They're humanists and optimists, mm-hmm. but they're on the very fucking line of nihilism. Yeah. Like, they've already given up most things, but they still have that core belief in people that they hang on to. This is what Nightville is. Like, it has a ton of... You don't matter and nothing matters and this is all, you know, some weird play for dark gods design and stuff like that. And then it flips it around and says, but within that thing, you are amazing and you're powerful mm-hmm. and you are great. Now, I don't agree with those messages, but this is a podcast. It's not a philosophy lecture. And it feels so good
it's like a storytelling podcast. If that's not clear to the listener.
Yeah, so let me do the intro. Like, okay, I'll just fucking do it.
No. Save it for next week because I think this deserves its own thing. But I was just going to say something. You know, Night Vale is a novel that came out recently, right?
Yeah, you can.
Okay, no. Good, wait. So, Night Vale is a podcast, but it's weird that they release a novel, right? Like,
right.
So, but there is a way for you to actually listen to that novel like you would listen to the podcast. You know what that is, Eden?
What is that?
That is Audible. And if you go to audibletrial.com/heavy, you can fucking listen to that for free if you don't have an Audible account already. Blah, 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 blah. Restrictions may apply. Blah. That was definitely. Goodbye.
Bye.